latest news from Financeland with Wiley Sims from Smartline, station sponsor.
The information provided in this segment is general advice only. Listeners should seek individual advice from their accountant, financial advisor or broker to see if the product is right for their situation. ACL number 385325.
Morning, Wiley. How are you?
Fantastic, Mitchell. Good morning to you. Good morning, listeners, and good day to Courtney, who's not too well today.
Yes, our thoughts are definitely with him. But I'm just looking at the table, and you've got a very, very nice, what would you call it, new piece of almost silverware or something for your trophy cabinet, pool room?
Glassware, Mitch.
Glassware?
Yes, as you're well aware, we won a little prize on Thursday night, so we're very proud of our Better Business Award, and really thanks to everybody here at The Pulse and Courtney, yourself, 50% of it's yours, Mitchell, and to Dennis, who helped me along when I first started broadcasting and doing Finance Land here. So it's something that the Pulse really should take credit for, as equally with myself, because it's all to do with community education and financial literacy and helping the community understand a little bit more about how finances work, Mitchell.
And very significant to win the Editor's Choice Award. They've recognised what you do here on the station, and they've said this is something worth supporting because the community education is so important and not enough people do it, I think was what I was getting from the award ceremony, even though some of the rivals were doing it. I don't think anyone does it to the extent that you do on this program.
Well, maybe we were just groundbreakers here. Mitch might be putting it that way, yeah.
We have a short extract from your speech on the award, which you won, and where you also acknowledged 94.7 The Pulse. So let's just have a listen to that before we jump into the rest of Finance Land for today.
I'm involved in Community Radio in Geelong. I relocated my business just over 3 years ago to Geelong, and I thought, how can I fast-track my business in terms of going a footstep? And I was approached by Community Radio, and they said, would you like to do a presentation on financial literacy for the community? Being an ex-academic, I kind of thought, yes, I could use these skills and help people. And so we focused on really trying to educate the community in Geelong about financial literacy, financial skills, and understanding everything from home loans 101, how to get a home loan, right through to what do I do if I've got a strike on my credit score, how can I solve it. So thank you for everybody. I'd like to acknowledge 94.7 The Pulse, Community Radio. Mitchell Dyer over there, who for the last 3 years has been presenting with me, and Dennis Scanlon before that, because it's been 4 years we've been doing that now. Mitchell tells me that we've spent 3.5 days on air in the last 3 years, and we just hope that the community's there for it, and hopefully it helps everybody deal with their clients and create a better situation. And I need to thank my dear wife, who's helping shift from academic to Australia. Thank you. Cheers.
So yeah, if we've spent 3.5 days on the airwaves together, I can't imagine a better person to spend it with than you, Wiley.
Mitchell will be due for annual leave soon, I reckon.
Yeah, we'll just have to talk to station management about that when we get off air. Now, Finance Land today, there's so much going on, so much has happened in the last couple of weeks. What's happening with this major bank in court over their home loan lending practices?
Yes, we got wind of this late last year, and what's occurred, Mitchell, is Westpac's actually now been taken to court for what's called failure to properly assess whether borrowers can meet their financial obligations. And it's alleged that this was happened between December 2011 and March 2015. The specific allegations alleging that they used a benchmark rate instead of actual expenses declared by the borrower in assessing their ability to repay the home loan, that the approved loans were a proper assessment of the borrower's ability to repay the loan should have been shown on a monthly deficit. And for home loans with an interest-only period, Westpac failed to take to record of high repayments at the end of the interest-only period when assessing the borrower's ability to pay. Now, basically, what are the implications here for borrowers, which are really important? It basically means that all the banks are really going to see this as a warning shot across the bows, irrespective of the outcome of the court case. And we've already seen that all lenders are now far more forensic in what they're asking for in loan applications, particularly with relationship to income and expenses. So when you go for your next home loan, do expect, ladies and gentlemen, that people are going to be asking a lot more about your expenses, your living expenses. And if they seem abnormally low, and more particularly if you want to get something like an interest-only period, then that'll have to be based on independent third-party advice of someone like your accountant, or there would need to be some other good reason. For example, if you switch from principal interest to interest-only, then it may be financial difficulties or something like that. So irrespective of the court outcome, there are now 11 other lenders that have been drawn into this web, and there's investigation through ASIC through that too. So watch this space, and we may find it, again, it becomes even a little bit more challenging to get your home loan in the future as a result of this prosecution that's occurring at the moment.
Is it RBA day today?
It's RBA day today, and yes, we've got some very interesting things occurring. The new Reserve Bank Governor, Mr. Lowe, has actually indicated in the last few weeks that the interest rate cuts are not in the national interest because of record levels of household debt. And he's also concerned that if interest rates were to be cut further, that would again fuel more property price rises. And we'll talk a little bit more about this later on, but the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, has also warned about risk in the Australian economy due to high property prices, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne. And it's interesting that Sydney prices have soared 73% in the last 5 years, and Sydney is now only second to Hong Kong in the world's least affordable housing market. Melbourne's not far behind because prices there have soared 52% in the same 5 year cycle. So Lowe hasn't increased, or under Lowe's leadership of the RBA, the increase of rates have not increased, and it's or decreased, I should say, and it's unlikely that they will. The warnings have also come because there's been easing of housing construction, particularly in high rise apartments, and the investors have turned significantly to bricks and mortar in Australia, and also they note that buyers from China have also started to sink their wealth into Australian real estate. Now, I've got a bit of a theory here, Mitch, and I think that we may find a very, very flat housing market in the next year or two. One, because of interest rate changes and likely a bit of upward pressure there. But also, there were some significant changes in the Chinese economy, where now Chinese folk are limited in the amount of cash that they can take out of China. That's been limited to around about $50,000. Don't ask me what that is in yuan or renminbi, or as they call it. The result is that there won't be as much cash flowing out of China, and the result is that I think that will have a definite effect on the Australian housing market. So, as we mentioned before, the OECD has put a couple of significant warnings about the Australian economy, and they're concerned that if housing prices get the wobbles, that there's going to be a flow-on effect right through the economy. And they're also concerned that, they say that the risk is not high because unemployment is unlikely to rise sharply unless the Chinese economy crashes. So, again, we really do need to keep a very vigilant eye on the Chinese economy, and some of the changes that they're making to manage their economy will have a ripple effect on Australia. So, again, watch this space. But it is concerning when the OECD starts making noises about risk in the Australian economy due to real estate prices, Mitchell.
Yeah, spot on then. You'll have to keep watching that. Now, some very good news for Victorian first-home buyers, and particularly Geelong. The state government has made a couple of announcements.
Yeah, I think the state government needs to be applauded on this. We've been talking about home affordability for some time, and the particular challenge that we've got for first-home buyers trying to get into the market. What's happened is they announced on the weekend that stamp duty will be abolished completely for first-home buyers under $600,000. So if you purchase up to $600,000, there'll be no stamp duty in Victoria whatsoever on both new and established properties. So that's going to save a significant amount. If you're buying an established property, you're probably looking $15,000 to $20,000 of genuine savings there. And there's a sliding scale up to $750,000, so you can still get into the market up to $750,000 and you'll get some savings there. So that's really good news for anyone who's first home buying right across Victoria. But more importantly, if we're going to look at the impact on Geelong, there's even better news for regional Victoria, and that naturally will affect Geelong. And that is that the grant for constructing a new property will increase from $10,000 to $20,000. So a little bit later, Mitch, I've actually done a worked example here of a typical property purchase for a first-time buyer in or around Geelong and showing the difference there. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you are looking at this and you're a first-time buyer, please remember that this is for contracts signed from July 1, 2017 up to 30th of June 2020. So if you're in the process of purchasing, you may want to just weigh up the strengths and weaknesses of maybe waiting a little bit there in order to get these larger grants, which will become available to you later on.
Very, very good. Now, what's happening... Actually, do you want to run through the working out that you did do?
Yeah, Mitch. So instead of doing a war story today, I did a scenario on first-time buyers buying in Geelong after July 1st, 2017. So the worked example, I've assumed here, to make it realistically, that we've got a working couple, both working and both earning the median income in Geelong, which based on the ABS data, which is $45,181 each. I've assumed they've got one child and they've got a credit card limit of $5,500 and monthly living expenses of $3,000. And I've assumed that they've been buying a new house and land package in or around Geelong of $450,000. Now, keep in mind that the median property price in Geelong is around $370,000. So if these figures don't work for our listeners, you may find if you're buying something cheaper than $450,000, you will find you can still get into the market. Basically, with $20,000 deposit now, your repayments would work out under the new package with first-time buyers of $2,035 per month. That works out at around about $500 per week. The difference is significant because previously people would have needed at least $45,000 deposit. And so the grant and the stamp duty reduction means that people basically need around about $25,000 less to get into the market for that same property. So that's significant. And we're very lucky being in Geelong, being a regional city, of course, we're going to get the maximum grant. Now, that was working on house and land construction. It would be different, of course, if you were buying an established property, but there would still be gains there for you, Mitch.
$500 a week is still a fair amount for someone earning $45,000 a year, isn't it?
Yeah, well, their rent would probably be around about the $350, $380 for a similar property. So the marginal price is about $120 per week. Mm. Remember that I did base it on $450,000. You could certainly get yourself into a cheaper property in some of the suburbs. If you were to maybe go to a three-bedder and something a little bit more humble on a smaller block, you'd probably get in the market for around about $350 to high threes on that. So you would probably be around about the $1,800 mark would be my guess there, Mitch.
Now on to today's topic, which is all about self-employed people, because we hear a lot about, you know, the sort of documentation you might have to bring with you to apply for these home loans. Bring a couple of pay slips and it'll all be good. But for a self-employed person, it's not quite that easy, is it?
No, Mitch. What happens with lenders, they're a little bit more stringent on requirements for self-employed people to be able to demonstrate their income. Now, if you're a wage and salary earner and you're paying tax on a weekly basis and you're getting pay slips, it's pretty easy. Majority of lenders simply want your two last pay slips with your year-to-date. In some cases, they may want a group certificate if, for example, you're casually employed. But self-employed, it gets a little bit more challenging. Normally, the majority of lenders are going to require you to have held your Australian business number, ABN, for at least 2 years and be trading for 2 years. And they will require your last 2 years' personal tax returns, your business tax returns, and your ATO assessment for 2 years. And that can be a little bit challenging. Some lenders may require a little bit more information. They may require your BAS statements. And where you've got a complicated business structure, maybe with trusts or multiple businesses, they may require details of these trusts, etc. Now, the difficulty for self-employed people, you might say, well, that sounds pretty easy, is that most self-employed people have accountants that do their taxation, and the accountant's job is really to try and minimise the income position to reduce tax liability for their clients. That's what the majority of them will do. So we may find somebody who's got quite a viable business, but it's not showing that it's making a lot of profit. And this becomes more challenging because if we were to simply look at that as income, it means that that person may not be able to get a loan because the business nominally doesn't show profit, even though it may be turning over well over $1 million. So what we find here is we can use this thing called ad backs, and it means that we have to go into the books of the company, and ad backs are things. And again, the add-back allowance will vary from lender to lender for self-employed people, but it would include things like car allowance, depreciation of plant and equipment, interest expenses for any loan that's being refinanced and will no longer exist. If you are self-employed and you're making a lot of superannuation over and above what you would need for normal contributions, that can be added back. And also if you've got one-off non-occurring expenses. So things like if you've had a major plant purchase, or if there's been one-off maintenance issues, maybe there was a breakdown in plant and equipment, then these are abnormal expenses and they can be added back to help at service. So it's a fairly bit more complex if you're self-employed, and we often find we have to do a lot more work on those to actually get them over the line. It's a lot easier, of course, if you're a sole trader and you don't have a complex business structure, and we still can use some of these add-backs if you're a sole trader as well, Mitch.
So if you're a sole trader but you've become a company, that would be the more complex business structure that you're talking about.
Yeah, although if you switch from being a sole trader to a company, it's not that challenging. You'd still need to provide the 2 years back tax to be able to show that. And the lenders are smart enough to realise that you've simply changed structure to maybe make it more efficient in terms of doing your accounting or some other reason there, Mitch.
Yeah, now that makes a lot of sense. So how can a self-employed person get a loan if they haven't done all their tax, if it's not up to date? Maybe what if they're doing it themselves and they don't have those accountant-prepared tax returns?
Okay, Mitch, it can still be done. And the reason we put this topic on this time of year is we find that March, April is where the lenders will start wanting the 2016 tax returns. Now, as we sit here now, the majority of lenders will take 2014-15s, but around about April, they say, bang, you have to have 2016s. And we often find a lot of small businesses don't have them done yet. They're often with their accountants, and for cash flow reasons, they haven't been submitted for one reason or another because they don't want to have to pay their GST or any tax obligations. They try and lengthen the time out for paying that. The result is they may not have 2016. Now, to get around that, we can do what's called a low document loan. And basically, low document loans mean that you need less than the documentation required, the 2 years tax, etc. Now, there is a drawback for that. Normally, if you're doing a low document loan, well, first of all, they're a little bit more challenging to find now because there's not as many of them around. But the lender will normally, you'll be paying a higher interest rate for that because it's not a fully documented loan. Typically, what you would need is a borrower's certificate of income declaration where the borrower themselves would declare their income is XXX. You might say, well, that's virtually a giveaway, but what you would have to have it supported by things like business activity statements, tax returns, and some cases your accountant may have to sign off and say that's a fair and reasonable estimate of your tax that we would expect at this time. So it can be done. And as I said, if you're doing a low document loan, the main difference is that the majority of lenders who do those limit the low document loan to 80% of the loan to value ratio, which means that you would need more deposit. So the reason that's done, again, is to take away some of the risk because they are assuming that the documentation you're supplying will come to fruition when your tax is done, and that will ultimately be your income, Mitch.
Very, very good. And not all low doc loans are made equal.
No, Mitch, as we said, they change from lender to lender. We will find quite a variation in interest rates with them. But we also find that where people are short-term self-employed, we can still get the loans if you haven't been trading for 2 years. Now, not surprisingly, these low-doc loans are loaded. So we can get a low document loan for somebody who's only been trading in a new business for maybe, say, 6 months. But not surprising, the interest rate is pretty horrific, and they're really only loans that are a solution to a problem rather than an ongoing loan that you'd want to have forever. Now, you might say, well, why would somebody want to go into a loan at, say, 7 or 8%? Well, it might be maybe they've sold their property and need a new one, and they've had to put some of that cash flow from the realisation of the property into the new business. Or it might be that somebody's gone from one business venture to another. Maybe they've changed the business from maybe retail into some other form of service industry or something like that, and so they'd be forced to have to go into a low document loan or some form of short-term loan, Mitch.
Now, what loans are hot this week?
Okay, the most popular loans we've had this week are both the ANZ Simplicity Plus and the CBA 3-year special. So we've had a bit of shuffling on the interest rates. So again, this CBA loan, consistently one of the top loans available. It is a 3-year special loan, but it will give you a lower interest rate for 3 years. We've got a number of specials at the moment, Mitch. I did a count only yesterday. We've got 7 banks at the moment who are waiving application fees, which can save our clients up to $850 for their initial startup loan costs. And we've got 7 lenders who are offering a range of special with discounted interest rates. So there's plenty of opportunity out there for people that are looking to refinance, get in the first home market. And I expect now, Mitch, we'll probably get a bit of a rush with first home buyers teeing themselves up and getting set up to buy after July 1 this year. Yeah. And hopefully that'll provide a bit of a boost for the economy as well, Mitch.
Well, when we catch up in 2 weeks' time, what will we be talking about?
I thought we might just talk generally how to get into home ownership, whether you're looking to upsize, downsize, resize, or first home buy. Just tick off a few of the boxes to get people set up and get them moving into home ownership, Mitchell.
Fantastic. What's your number?
1300 280 342. And always, if people want some information about anything we've spoken about today or just want to do a home loan health check, they can always ring me on 1300 280 342, and happy to help them towards home ownership, Mitchell.
Fantastic. Well, good on you, Wally. And I'll just give a shout out to all the people that I was with at the table at the awards ceremony. Thank you for having me as a guest on your Smartline table, and especially your wife and family. It was great to meet them all. And really good bunch of people, and all very happy about your success.
Our pleasure, Mitchell. And I think they want you to come back for Christmas.
Well, I'll be first there. And can we also give a shout out to listener David? He's riding the bike down to Queenscliff as we speak. He finds what we say particularly motivating, I think, to get up those hills in headwinds. So hello, David. Thanks for listening to The Pulse. Well, Wiley, thank you. We'll catch up with you in a fortnight.
Cheers, Mitchell.
Wiley Sims there from Smartline. We'll go to a break after the break in Compass, talking about their pumpkin fair, the third annual one, and it's coming up very soon.
The information provided in this segment is general advice only. Listeners should seek individual advice from their accountant, financial advisor, or broker to see if the product is right for their situation. ACL number 385325.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.